Full Service Radio is proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit simplecast.com.
Recorded live from the lobby of the Lion Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C.
Good afternoon, good afternoon. Welcome once again to Junctional Thinking, the podcast, recording live from the Lion Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. on Full Service Radio. My name is Pierre Vigilance and I'm your host. My career path has taken me through a couple different sectors, from clinical work in the emergency department, both as an EMT and then through emergency medicine residency training, and then on to work in the nonprofit sector on the substance abuse side of things, working with a community development corporation, and from there into government for a few years, and then into academia for a while, and now in the sort of impact investment and sort of operations and management consulting space. I am very clear through all those different places that health and health outcomes are not and should not be just the sort of wheelhouse of healthcare to take care of. So meaning that we need a whole lot more partners to engage in the multiple different opportunities and creating the innovations necessary to impact health, because healthcare cannot do it by itself. And being upstream in this area that we've called social determinants of health is something that's challenging for a number of different reasons, but it's necessary. It requires us to be in different places and spaces with people from different experiences, both educationally and life-wise, who are able to come together to help solve problems. So economics, economic development, transportation, housing, just to name a few, education, these are all important and very relevant sectors to deal with. So our guests come from a number of different places. Not all of them are public health backgrounds, but today's guest, Andre Blackman, does have a public health background, graduating from a school not too far from here, University of Maryland, College Park. And he has done a few different things in his career, but his work has always been about pushing the boundaries, in my mind anyway, pushing the boundaries related to what we consider appropriate and, you know, appropriately diverse and inclusive and also appropriately innovative interventions and approaches to health and improving health outcomes. So I'm really happy to be joined by him today on the phone from, I think it's Raleigh, you in Raleigh, Durham, North Carolina, Dre?
Yes, Raleigh, North Carolina.
Raleigh, North Carolina. So thanks very much for being on the show, bro.
Absolutely happy to be here, man. Thank you so much.
If you could start off just by giving us a little taste of your background, because I think some folks know you just as this mega connector. Other folks know you from the diversity and inclusion space. People know you from Pulse and Signal with respect to just sort of sharing great information and putting people on with respect to various interventions that are out there. And some people know you from the film festival you used to do, a number of different sort of spaces. So tell us a bit about how you got to where you are now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so growing up in the D.C., Maryland area, you know, you have tremendous access to so many different, you know, organizations and opportunities. So for me, you know, I was, you know, when I was much younger, just really focused on, you know, STEM, right? Science and technology, really kind of focused on, you know, going to school for aerospace engineering at Maryland. And was just really fascinated by how things work. And that's just been, you know, a constant theme throughout my career is connecting the dots, figuring out why things work, why things happen, and making sure that the resources are connected to, you know, solutions and outcomes. So, you know, my background, you know, for the past, I guess, you know, almost 15 years now has been always focused around, you know, health, public health, healthcare, that sort of thing, with that specific lens around innovation. And so, you know, early on in my career, you know, getting started, you know, when social media was just getting hot, so when people had blogs, if you had a blog at all, you were a rock star instantly. And so, you know, this is around, you know, 2007 where I decided to start writing about, you know, what I've been seeing as far as the intersection of public health and, you know, digital strategy, you know, innovation, technology, on the Pulse and Signal blog. And that's what really kind of catapulted me into these spaces around innovation and tech, design thinking, communications, which was primarily my career, you know, specifically in strategic communications, digital strategy and that sort of thing. You know, but, you know, fast forward, you know, to just, you know, meeting such tremendous people through social media, you know, once again, that kind of connections piece, right? Just meeting so many dynamic people across the country and across the world really led me into spaces that really wanted to shine a spotlight on what was happening. So I always had this tremendous desire to kind of build stories and narratives that shine a spotlight on the amazing things that were happening, on the amazing people, right? So with Pulse and Signal, you know, doing things like, you know, not only writing about some certain things that were happening in the space, but also interviewing, you know, amazing people like Susanna Fox, who was at the point, you know, at the Pew Internet Project and has, you know, gone all the way to, you know, doing amazing things in HHS and beyond. But that was another big, big kind of theme for me is people and the people that were actually building the future of health. And so, you know, that's kind of how I got started in this space, just always connecting the dots with, you know, what was happening and the people that that were behind them.
So in thinking about that, and then you talked about people just now, and it's really been very much about people and stories. And I think that that's important for folks to hear, because as I listen to companies talk now about the work they're doing, they're talking about information they're getting from data sets and not necessarily from individuals. So they're, and it's appropriate sometimes, I think, to get information from aggregated, you know, data sources or information sources, but talking to people is key. And something that I don't know if we're losing a bit of that with respect to some of our processes. What's your take on, as we think about this whole junctional thinking piece and the notion of listening and learning from multiple different sources, what's your take on what it is that we need to be doing in order to really create sustainable public health programming from that listening perspective? Who should we be listening to that maybe we haven't really been listening to that much?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I mean, you know, a number of years ago, I wrote this thing called the Sustain or Die Manifesto, where, you know, after a couple years being in, you know, this kind of innovation space and meeting such incredible people, but also kind of tying that to my background in public health and being on the field and asking, you know, questions from the community. One of the things that I saw a growing trend of is just kind of coming to communities with, you know, answers that were already, you know, 99% figured out, quote unquote, figured out, right? And, you know, essentially just trying to get validation from, you know, the community around these kind of initiatives, giving it a thumbs up and then moving it through the process, right? What I saw that was lacking was that kind of co-creation piece. And, you know, to your point, you know, now data is currency, right? Like it's helped, you know, people in our landscape to understand problems better and to create opportunities to map solutions, because, you know, the data has given us this kind of insight. This is where we should be heading. So it definitely has given us an accelerated pathway to solutions or to potential solutions. But, you know, once again, you know, we're not creating 3D printed, you know, refrigerators here, right? I mean, we're talking about, you know, dynamic lives and experiences that, you know, have nuance to them that we cannot just get from numbers, right? You know, once again, there's, you know, things like precision medicine and AI that are coming to the table, which definitely have its, kind of place and role. But that kind of nuance around stories and what motivates people, you know, to have their behaviors, right? You know, what motivates people, to, you know, want to, build things or to take care of their families, and how do they take care of their families, right? Like building in empathy, right? Like these are all the different things that have been, you know, part of the conversation over the past several years, particularly in the health innovation landscape. You know, right, we're talking about, you know, patients and talking to patients about, you know, how they do certain things, right? So we've all seen a lot of the innovations come out around technology that, you know, that failed to be sustainable in their value add, because they forgot to actually talk to people.
Right.
You know, they forgot to actually see how the design worked in the real world.
Right.
Right? And sometimes, you know, as we all know, right, people are irrational. You know, we do things sometimes that don't make sense. And so it's hard to predict those kind of things without having that narrative. And so, you know, going back to your question, definitely making sure that design is built into anything that, you know, is created. You know, some of our partners and friends over at Diagram in New York City, that's all they do. They, you know, they focus on design thinking and design in healthcare and, you know, have these sessions where, you know, you're bringing people in, you're getting insights, and then you're connecting that to the data so that you make informed decisions
right.
that have, you know, a layer that, you know people will be making use of. So I feel like, you know, as far as the kinds of people to talk to, it's definitely, you know, bring in, you know, consumers and the community that will be, you know, that you're getting information from, right? Like, that's another piece to this is the ownership. You know, if you're extracting data from communities, you might as well actually, you know, involve them in what's going on. So there's that piece. But also, you know, if we're talking about, you know, junctional thinking and, you know, the various sectors, you know, the design thinking kind of aspect really kind of streamlines from start to finish, you know, whether you're involving the right kind of pieces in the process. So, you know, we're at a point now where we cannot be in that kind of, you know, closed box thinking. And so having, you know, various disciplines at the table at all parts of any kind of innovative or any kind of, you know, programming is going to be needed. So from planning to execution to debrief, that's definitely the name of the game.
And I like what you said about before, and you were talking about the engagement of communities cannot just be or should not just be for, and I wrote this down, validation without co-creation. So the idea that we have, and I don't know that community-based participatory researchers always necessarily set out to do this or mean to do it, but there are certainly, I've been involved with, say, focus groups where the focus group conversation was around a set of assumptions that had already been made based on information that didn't come from community but may have come from some other potentially valid sources, but the purpose of the focus group was to validate this information, which actually, you know, and in a couple instances when it wasn't validated, then people went back to the drawing board. But it might have been better to just have asked the question in the first place as opposed to come in with this sort of this idea about what was what. But you mentioned Diagram out of New York, and there are a bunch of other companies that you've spoken to and have advised and are in touch with you on a regular basis from a couple perspectives. We'll get a little bit later in the show into how you are matching or creating opportunities for the appropriate and the right kind of personnel to be involved with those companies as well. Now you're sort of in getting involved in the search firm end of things. But I wanted to ask you, like, sort of what ideas are coming across your desk that are making you send that, you know, blow your mind emoji out to in response? You know what I mean? So I'm sure you've seen and heard a bunch of different stuff. But what's really, if there was one thing right now, you sort of say, you know what, when this hits, this is going to be crazy. What in the public health space, if there's such a thing, what would you say that thing is right now?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, if I had one thing to pull out, it would be the amplification and I don't even want to say awareness, but it's the reinforced kind of platform that a lot of systemic bias and racism is getting within, you know, our industry. This is something that, you know, has been pervasive for a long time. And, you know, oftentimes, you know, we going back to the data piece, right? Like, we want to say, like, okay, this is why this community is suffering from diabetes.
Right.
And literally every year the same report comes out, right?
Absolutely.
Without, you know, the people, you know, changing or, like, are we, you know, are we patting ourselves on the back because we're you know, perpetuating this narrative, right? And that was one of the things that frustrated me about kind of the public health industry as a whole, like, you know, in its very kind of 1.0 landscape, right? Like, where are we shifting things, right? Like, where are we showcasing what needs to be done and the key players? And so I would say, like, a two-part piece would be the kind of new players that are coming to the table and the new voices that are able to amplify these aspects around unconscious bias, you know, systemic aspects that have kind of plagued the healthcare system, and especially now that we're seeing this kind of, you know, intersection of public health or upstream and, you know, traditional healthcare and medicine kind of converging, you know, this is really kind of blowing up the model, right? I mean, it was one of those things where, you know, public health has been, you know, advocating for this kind of stuff, but now, you know, we're here and now it's kind of tipping the scales, right? So there's, you know, opportunity to kind of over medicalize social determinants, right? Which is, you know, the universal hot
call
term.
It population health, right?
Exactly, right? Mm-hmm. And so now we're getting caught up in the alphabet soup of things. But, you know, at the end of the day, this aspect of, you know, kind of, you know, bias and like how we need to kind of raise the bar on that and kind of bring that to the table to really create these solutions, right? Because once again, like, there are these underpinnings that, you know, a lot of people, you know, may want to sweep under the carpet, right? Or say like, yeah, that might be a piece to it. Well, no, it's actually it is actually the piece.
It is,
right?
The piece, right?
Like, we cannot, you know, build innovation, quote unquote innovation, on top of kind of, you know, raggedy foundations, right?
No.
I think that would be one thing that I would really pull to the table. You have people now, like, you know, Dr. Rachel Hardiman out in, you know, Minnesota, like researchers, public health people that have a lens on this kind of stuff, and their work is getting a platform, right? Ariana Planey, as well, like in the Chicago area. Also, you know, one of the kind of key leaders in New York City, Dr. Letha Maybank, mm-hmm. Who's now the chief health equity officer at the American Medical Association.
AMA, right? Yeah, kind of,
yeah, exactly. And so now this is taking front and center right to the conversation. So I think that this is going to be transformative in a way that still makes people uncomfortable, but yes. You know, we cannot get to the root of solutions without these kind of things. And
that,
you know, yeah. And it's even leaving traditional public health, right? You know, I gave a talk a couple of weeks ago talking about Serena Williams, right? You know, very much known for her athletic prowess. But also a lot of people just didn't know about how much of her maternal health or maternity and pregnancy kind of were surrounded by bias and stigma,
right?
That she kind of brought to the spotlight. And so I would definitely say that that's a key component that I would say, you know, it might not be quote unquote innovation in itself.
No.
But I think it's going to really kind of move the needle in some really sustainable ways.
But still, okay, this is good stuff. I want to sort of stick with that for a second. The voice you're hearing is that of Andre Blackman, founder and CEO of Onboard Health. And so you haven't even said that yet, and I apologize for that, Andre. But has also basically a long time public health innovation and communications expert who's pivoted through a different number of different sort of phases of things into now being very involved in and engaged in what we were just talking about there, which is this diversity and inclusion space and really amplifying that conversation with respect to bias. You're listening to the Junctional Thinking Podcast on Full Service Radio, broadcasting live from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Before we go to break in a couple minutes, though, Dre, I wanted to, and we didn't really talk about this much, but I wanted to ask you, because I had a conversation last night. It was at a Black Angels event, which is an event that was put together by a financial advisory group with the Golden Seeds group, actually, to facilitate the education of a group of, turned out to be a group of African-American surgeons about the opportunity to become angel investors and what it took to become an angel investor, etc. So a couple companies presented just to sort of give them a taste of the challenges they have in raising money. And one of them, the founder of an Apple source called Sanaya, shout out to Keisha Jeremy, who is doing a lot of really great work out there with breaking down all kinds of barriers. But she and Taeja O'Brien from Seem Social Labs both described this scenario where they tend to be the only when they go into a room, right? They go into a room of real estate investors on Taeja's part or real estate developers. They're the only ones who are, you know, the women of color. Keisha, same thing, goes into different spaces. And she described it very eloquently as being a time and a place where you're having to really have some empathy for people because they haven't seen it before, right? They haven't seen entrepreneurs like these women before. When you and I, as men of color, walk into certain rooms and have certain conversations, they haven't seen us either. So my question for you is sort of like, how has any of that impacted your work? Because you're talking about the bias in the field, but you've also probably experienced some of this bias. And how do you reconcile some of that and the perturbation that it creates, at least it creates some in me, and your work? You know, how do you sort of, how does that sort of fit in?
Oh man, this is the good stuff right here, right? I mean, it's one of those situations where there's so many different narratives to unpack when it comes to identity and the workplace, right? Just at the fundamental level. And, you know, being able to show up, right, as a whole self is, you know, oftentimes what we're hearing about right now, right? For me, you know, there's a couple of different layers to it, right? Like, you know, a first-generation American, you know, my parents are from the Caribbean, like, you know, dropping down in Brooklyn and, like, moving forward in the D.C. area, right? So even that, you know, not necessarily having a quote-unquote history, you know, to kind of pull from my family about, you know, living in America and, you know, various, you know, aspects, you know, of our history that kind of, you know, move toward this reason why we're talking about diversity and inclusion. So that's one thing for me, right? Kind of growing up and learning fresh, you know, around stigma and that sort of thing. That's something that I point out in that article I wrote earlier this year about why I started Onboard Health. And I'll get into that in a second, but, you know, or Onboard Health in a second. But essentially the story had to do with, you know, going to the 10th grade science fair. And once again, like I mentioned earlier, being very involved in science and technology, you know, and if I have an opportunity to showcase, right, like highlight and tell my story of what I'm interested in, I'm going to go all the way. And that's one of the things that, you know, my mother taught me is to just, you know, excellence, right? So what did I do? I, you know, went to NIH and, you know, my presentation was about the effects of enzymes on DNA, right? And so, you know, most of my peers in 10th grade were not doing that, to say the least, right? And the thing that really kind of turned it around for me at that young age was not placing at all at that science fair. Wow. And, you know, kind of learning, you know, firsthand, like what, you know, expectations are for a person of color, for a young person of color, and that sort of thing. So throughout my career, it's so funny that we talk about the only because that was kind of my experience in the innovation landscape, you know, going to the very first, you know, Health 2.0 conference, right, or the first couple. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of a way that I, you know, stood out, right, which is kind of like a catch-22 for brand building purposes. But, you know, being the only man of color at a lot of these kind of events kind of was the main reason why I started Onboard Health, that whole narrative. And then hearing that from so many other people
yes.
Over these past, you know, couple of years. And so it's impacted me personally, but it's also been a driver for where I'm showing up right now.
Right. And that's a great, I appreciate you sharing that because I think that sometimes people think about companies as being things that are sort of this other thing that they do rather than it being sort of necessarily part of who they are. And for you, your company is really, you are tied to the mission personally and professionally. It obviously is of significant value to the people who you serve, but it comes from your own experiences, which drive the passion that you have for the work that you do. So I think that it's important for people to hear that. So thank you for that. You've been listening to Junctional Thinking, the podcast on Full Service Radio, broadcasting live from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. I'm your host, Pierre Vigilance. Our guest today, Andre Blackman, founder and CEO of Onboard Health, and we will be back with you in just a couple minutes. Thank you very much for tuning in. This is the Junctional Thinking Podcast, broadcasting live from the Lion Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. I'm your host, Pierre Vigilance, and my guest today is Andre Blackman, CEO and founder of Onboard Health. And we were just getting into, we were getting into the stuff. I mean, and this is sort of, diversity and inclusion work is not a comfortable space, as Andre was just referring to. And it's one of those places where I think that if we are going to undo some of the systems that are in place that create some of the disparities, or most of the disparities that we talk about in public health and try to work on, then we have to really dig into not only the systems themselves, but also who works to perpetuate those systems and who works in those systems to potentially change the way that those systems work. And so I wanted to pivot a bit from your personal story and our conversation about your growing up and how you identify with the work to the people that you connect with, and the people that you try to connect to the work. So you've advised a number of different organizations, companies, etc., along the way. And how do you, for those people out there who are interested in that type of work, advising companies and entities on public health work, how did you get into that? Was it through the digital marketing and the communication stuff, or were there some other angles that you used to get to that?
Yeah, it was definitely, you know, through the experience. And I feel like, you know, at any time that you want to kind of, you know, move a little bit above the kind of quote unquote, you know, standard 9-to-5, I guess, and to kind of share your expertise on a larger scale, it takes a little bit of investment in how you show up and where you show up. And so, for me, it was definitely the kind of career pathway that I was on in public health and healthcare and communications and things of that nature. But also just being very active in the spaces where people were communicating, asking questions, and being very proactive about being able to share those kind of, you know, thoughts and insights. So, I mean, we're definitely, you know, in that, you know, value sharing economy. You know, we were, you know, several years ago, we were hitting the information age, right, where everything was just, you know, at our fingertips. And now, you know, we're in a space now where we're so overwhelmed with information. If you're able to curate, perspectives and insights in a kind of value adding and critical thinking and problem solving perspective, that kind of elevates, your experience into, being someone that people can come to for insights and advice and advising and things of that nature. So, I mean, I put in the work as far as that regard and, you know, connecting the dots and connecting with people as much as possible. And that's one way that I got to that point, just kind of being very intentional and clear on the kind of impact that I wanted to have and moving on from there.
Right. Now, I think that's the advice that you've even given me over the years when we've talked, the questions that you've asked have been definitely thought-provoking and resulting in me thinking differently about who it is that I say that I am and what the value is that I'm providing in a much more succinct and clear way than I may have been used to doing, in part because of, you know, training and exposure beforehand, but also partly a function of the way that public health education and public health thinks about things. And business is sort of, there's some dirt associated with that. If you start trying to sort of talk too much about public health and business, people say we're not a business, we're not in business. But everybody else is, so yeah. You better do something about how you're carrying yourself. So as you advise and talk to, now you've sort of made this move into, to some extent, not only advising, but you're also helping people connect with job opportunities. And I know that some of our listeners are definitely in that space in different phases of their careers and wanting to know from different perspectives how to get into that next gig. What kind of advice do you have for sort of early mid-career public health professionals who are thinking about themselves getting into another job and being of value in that new place?
Yeah, thank you for that. And just to go back to your other point about, you know, mixing business with public health, I mean, you know, look, like we're now in a space where there's so many different players that are impacting the future of health, right? That's why I kind of talk about, you know, building, you know, the inclusive and the sustainable future of health. If that's the lane that you want to be in, right, like looking at the outcomes that you want to, you know, have a hand in impacting, and then working backwards from that. Because oftentimes, like, we get into, the language of, you know, business and, like, for profit and, you know, are we making money off of people? Like, that's lower kind of level thinking. What you need to start thinking about now is where things are going and if you want to be at the helm of changing behavior and influencing, like, how the future of health looks. Like, that's how I've kind of seen it for the past several years, because when you start getting into the semantics, then, you know, once again, like, you're already closing yourself off
right
to opportunities to make sustainable and long-term impact.
Precisely.
So, you know, that's I want to just kind of share that really quickly, because, you know, you have key players now who are, you know, shaping the data science landscape. You know, they're shaping, you know, engineering, product, you know, behavioral design, and, you know, there are business models that are long-term, creating, you know, economic value, but also are, you know, creating that kind of impact that we're looking at. So that's my little spiel on that. And as far as, you know, kind of building, you know, and getting aware, I mean, you know, once again, like, getting clear on where you want to create that impact is going to be pretty essential, because, you know, your why is going to be the thing that that kind of carries you forward in all sorts of different opportunities that come your way, whether that's a fellowship or a job or an event that you get, you know, invited to speak at. You know, if everything is tying back to how you want to build a legacy and build, you know, your impact, that's where things will stem from. And so Simon Sinek, you know, kind of coined that whole, like, the golden circle and, like, you know, start with why, right? Like, I think that applies, you know, to business, to any kind of ventures, but also to yourself. like as you set your intentions for how your life and your impact kind of create value. So I would definitely say that piece. And, you know, once again, like doing the research, seeing what's out there is the next piece, right? Like listening, you know, kind of doing the things that help you understand what are the opportunities in the landscape, right? So if you're interested in chronic disease or diabetes, right, and if you're interested in figuring out where your career is going to go, I would encourage you to look at what's happening, you know, around these kind of landscapes around chronic disease. Look at the companies that are tackling these things, right? Omada Health, you know, has been blending coaching and technology and data to tackle that. And, you know, they're expanding into, you know, other areas as well. Livongo out in San Francisco is another company that is using technology and devices to kind of mitigate and tackle, you know, the diabetes landscape as well. So, you know, once you start doing an industry landscape, you know, seeing what your opportunities are in careers or what kind of fellowships, what kind of events are talking about these things, right? Like having that research really kind of starts setting you up to say, okay, this is what I've seen right now that's in this space about where I want to create impact. How do I chop it up, you know, now to listen, to pay attention to the trends? And then that's when you start looking at who are the kind of key individuals and the leaders and the innovators that are in the space that, you know, now with social media and other kind of platforms, you can actually understand some of their, you know, specific insights, right?
Okay.
So you can kind of drill down, you know, from that kind of research and industry landscape kind of scan, and then start looking at who are the collaborators and partners that are kind of, you know, shaping change. And then, you know, kind of, you know, build that into some sort of dashboard where you're learning. And then it's about just showing up, you
right.
know, like if
right.
we're talking
presence.
About building your brand and your platform, you know, kind of looking at how you can show up into speaking and at conferences or at summits or kind of local meetups around, you know, design thinking and health. You know, one of my colleagues, Emily Springer, put me on to a number of things that are happening in the DC area around, you know, design thinking and health, right? So, you know, being able to show up and speak and share your own insights and thoughts is a really great way. But also, you know, writing. You know, we have, you know, platforms like LinkedIn and Medium that
yes.
allow you to easily, you know, share your thoughts. And that's a great way for people to start discovering you. And it's kind of like a win-win situation. You get your thoughts out there, and then that attracts opportunities for you, whether that's, you know, jobs or otherwise, right? And so just kind of being in producer mode is, you know, where the magic happens. And
right.
so, you know, and, you know, if we're looking at it from a passive kind of landscape, you know, you're looking at, you know, putting out, you know, a website where people can, you know, as they read your content, get back to, you know, who are you, right? And so, and that's how you kind of close the loop on all of this as far as their platform and, you know, keeping an eye on the companies and the careers that are out there.
Yeah, it's an interesting approach to it and slightly different than what some others might say, which is sort of go look and see who's publishing in XYZ journal on XYZ topic. And I say it's good to read, certainly, but read things that are actionable, really. Read things that are, you know, in journals and in publications where the angle is towards things that we can, that are happening, that are current, that we can use. So that's why I tend to sort of look more at Health Affairs and Fast Company and Wired than I do some other journals that will remain nameless. Now, I know before any of my academic colleagues out there start firing shots that, that, you know, the coin of the realm is peer-reviewed journals, and that's what the Academy wants. Understood. However, if the research is not being done in a manner that provides timely, actionable opportunities for impacting health and health outcomes, then the question does exist, which is, why are we doing it? And so
right.
it's that sort of brings us around to that. In the last few minutes, and you've been listening to the voice of Andre Blackman, who is the founder and CEO of Onboard Health, on full service radio, broadcasting live from the Lion Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. This is the Junctional Thinking Podcast. And as we get ready to close the show out, I wanted to see if you had any, like, your top three tips for job searches. Now, I know you said just now some stuff about, you know, leaning in and finding out what you need to find out about your particular area and doing the research there. But if there were three skills that you'd say to people, look, you need to make sure that you are adept at A, B, and C. Do you have like an A, B, and C that you would tell people who are early or even mid-career, especially in this social impact / public health space?
Yeah, that's a good question, P. I would say to, you know, take inventory and stock of what you've already done or what you already know, and know how to clearly articulate that. Okay. Right? So know how to clearly articulate your value add with whatever you have right now and your experience. And that helps you to do two things. It helps you to be more aware mm-hmm. of what you're able to do so that in any kind of conversations, you can quickly spin that up. And it also, you know, if you're thinking about doing any kind of pivot or looking at, you know, the tech or the venture capital, you know, industries, for example, and want to contribute over there, like you have a clear understanding about how you can make that pivot, and how you can contribute and provide value, as well. So being very clear on that, and then being able to package that up. So not only are you able to articulate that, but you're able to put it in a way that people can easily do a scan, learn, you know, quickly about, you know, what you have done and accomplished. And so, you know, nowadays you can do that with, you know, platforms like LinkedIn
right.
or your own website, you know, and that's what you own. And you're able to kind of, you know, create a narrative, you know, that you own. And so that's another piece that really ties into the branding thing as well is,
good.
You know, how do you, you know, kind of capture and provide people with a quick sense of like your writings or your interests and things
right.
of that nature.
Your capabilities.
And then I would say the third one would be to get really good at outreach, and making sure that, you know, people in your circle know what you're doing, what you're looking for. So if you're on the job hunt, you know, think about, you know, does your LinkedIn network know, right? That, like, or is your first and second kind of, you know, level of circles, of people that you know and trust, do they understand that you're on the hunt or that you're on the looking
right.
out for certain things? And then kind of framing that up in a very succinct way in an email, and then start those conversations. You know, do you have a list of, you know, dream companies that, you know, you might want to work at, you know, and start, you know, making those connections? Do you
right.
know somebody who works at XYZ? Are you, you know, able to make an intro? And so getting really
yeah.
good at the art of outreach and starting to be proactive about connecting the dots, because that's how this worked. That's pretty much my entire career, is, you know, getting good at, you know, connecting with people, connecting others to others. Right. And that just kind of shares, you know, value all around. But I would say definitely getting good at articulating your value add, packaging things up so that people can easily see and learn more about you, and then getting good at the art of outreach would be the A, B, and C.
It's fantastic. Well, thank you so much. Those are three great pieces of advice. And I think that actually, no matter where you are in your career, you probably need to check to see if you're good at all three of those things, even while you're in a job, because, you know, you just never know for how much longer you are going to want to stay there. So you should be nimble and be prepared to make your next move. Dre, thank you very much for your time, and your energy and insights. We appreciate you so much for taking the time out today to join me on the show.
All right, Pete. Thank you so very much for having me. It was a pleasure. And looking forward to connecting with your listeners on all things building an inclusive future of health.
Excellent. Thank you. And thank you, too, for the introduction to Ramon years ago. Ramon actually is listening. Shout out to Ramon Lamas. We caught up the other day. He listens to the show and gave me some great feedback, too. So thank you. And anybody else out there interested in sending some feedback, please do so. Thank you. Continue to listen, subscribe, tell your friends, and we'll keep this Junctional Thinking movement going. Thanks a lot. Take care, and I'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter @FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook @FullServiceRadio. Thanks for listening.